Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's not easy, no, it's not easy, it's not easy breaking your heart.
And welcome to the Billboard Sharpie Podcast. Gary Trust, really excited to have a Grammy and Emmy Award winning songwriter, producer, founder of Kid in a Corner Records, Alex DeKid, here on the Billboard Sharpie Podcast. Welcome, Alex.
Thanks for having me.
This is really interesting. We're going to talk about so many things you've done because you've had really a relatively short time, such a hit-packed career. You've been all over Billboard charts here in the 2010s, starting back with Airplanes and Love the Way You Lie. And I want to start, though, with your current hit, because this is really interesting from the creative process of how this one came together. And it's your first single as an artist, Alex. It's Not Easy. A song that was collaborated with some human beings, but also IBM Watson. So tell me what this is the first time we've ever had to say that that we have a non-human collaborator. I love that.
Yes. I mean, I can tell you a bit about it. I basically started collaborating with IBM and Watson about a year ago. And just kind of asking, once we got the parameters of what we were kind of trying to do, I just started asking some, I'm very inquisitive, and my creative process always starts with conversation anyway. So I was kind of really turned on by the fact that I could do that at scale with Watson, and just kind of ask, just kind of understand more data and just, and just kind of understand human conversation and, the human condition and human thinking a little more like in depth. So we started basically, asking questions and just kind of, looking at the data, and then kind of took that inspiration and then went into the studio and created a song, the normal way I do it, with the artist and that's kind of what happened in the short version.
So for people who don't know, Watson is, it's a cognitive technology that you ask it questions and it responds in its own way. So how did this work specifically? You ask questions about song data or popular culture data, song lyrics. It looked at things that are being discussed in movie scripts and articles. How exactly did this whole process work?
Yeah, so basically we did kind of what you just said. We asked about trends in songs over the last 5 years, and we also asked about popular culture and just things that are happening in society. We also looked at social media and looked at, tons of conversations on a macro and micro level, and kind of got back these interesting results, which basically suggested that people like, they like darker songs. They like, that anger was pretty high up on the charts. We had disgust, which I was kind of surprised at, because I'm always drawn to darker songs. My songs always kind of have a dark element to them, because I just think pain and anger are a bit more, just have a bit more depth to it and just have more levels to it. But I didn't know everybody else felt that way too. So, that's kind of a simple version of what we did and what we found. And then I took all of that kind of data and then kind of started thinking about how to use it and how to, kind of move forward in the creative process.
Did IBM come to you with this idea? I know you're a techie. You love this kind of stuff. How did it even come about?
Yeah, so I just started a creative agency within my record company. So we kind of, you know, work with brands and big blue chip companies and help them with their marketing efforts, because, you know, my feeling is that music is super under leveraged in marketing. A lot of times people just look at it as a song, but there's so much more that, you know, music can do. Like, music's, you know, absolutely like the language of emotions. Like, we can move people's emotions better than anything else, I would say, out there. So, you know, and all the research, not to go into too much detail, but all the research that shows that, like, when consumers are moved emotionally, it definitely boosts product sales and everything else. So I just think that, you know, so we basically started you know, a creative agency within, you know, kind of, I guess, what I'm doing at Kid in the Corner. And then, you know, we took on IBM as a client and started working with each other.
Was it similar in some ways, even though you're dealing with a computer system? Was it sort of similar to maybe you'd be sitting around with other human collaborators kicking around ideas, and this was just sort of a more technological way to maybe arrive at the same starting point for what you might write a song about?
Kind of. It definitely the start of it, because, you know, like I said before, most of my creative process starts a conversation. So a lot of the times when I work with an artist or a songwriter, we either go for a drink or we're in the studio, and I'll start, you know, asking them very personal questions about love and about, you know, their childhood and stuff, and that kind of sets the tone for what we do a lot of times. And so that's what I did with, I guess, but on a scale that I couldn't normally have access to with Watson, where I'm looking at all of that kind of stuff, you know, on social media and stuff like that, with people kind of just having conversations. So that part, you know, was definitely very interesting, for sure.
So you just took out the small talk. You just got right to the point of what you needed to write about.
Well, I mean, it's a process. It doesn't just happen, obviously. And it's still, like, you know, a big thing that, like, I think people kind of don't quite get a lot of the times is that, you know, AI in general, and definitely Watson, you know, is not here to replace human beings in any way. It's just a tool. Just like, you know, how I use a laptop to make music is a tool.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it sort of reminds me of in sports, how the human element versus all the statistics that have become a part of the way sports are run now, where it's, you know, it's the analytics age. So this is sort of the musical version of that, where you're just looking at what songs have been hits and maybe why they were. Was it just the lyrics? Was it also it wasn't the music, right? It was just the lyrical angle that Watson provided.
No, yeah, it was basically looking at, like, trends of what's going on in culture and society. One of the things I wanted to understand is, like, you know, when things are going, you know, quote unquote bad in society, do people want to hear, you know, songs that are uplifting to escape from that, or do they want to hear songs about that? You know, it's just things like that. There's kind of understanding human behavior from all the data. That's just super interesting to me, because, you know, it's just, I'm just, you know, and yeah, so, and getting back to the, just what I was saying before, just, you know, it's, you know, it's definitely a tool. It's not like a replacement for humans, which is, you know, I'm an optimist when it comes to technology, and I look at it, I think a lot of people are scared and fearful of things they don't understand, and you know, I kind of look at, you know, this is like, you know, I wouldn't, 90% of the music I make wouldn't exist without, you know, tools, without my laptop and, like, you know, all the things I use to kind of, you know, create music. So, you know, to me, it's a really positive thing.
And then at that point, Watson's work was done, right? You had the data, and then from there it was you onto writing the song, and Watson didn't have anything to do with lyrics after that, or did you go back at all for anything else? That was just more for preliminary data before writing the song.
Yeah, so after we did that, I just collaborated in my normal fashion with the artists. You know, I work closely with ex-ambassadors. They're signed to my label, and, you know, we work all the time just creating stuff. So that was kind of, you know, we created song, you know, we created everything just kind of based on, you know, how we normally work, you know, our creative dynamic. And then we kind of took it to Wiz and Earl, and they did their part, you know. But yeah, so that was kind of, at no point was I telling, like, Watson to, like, you know, I was, change that melody or tell me about your bad relationship, you know. It wasn't that fluid. That was more with the artist.
And a lot of your songs, they they hit a lot of different sounds. One of your most recent hits that you've written and produced, Sucker for Pain, it's got maybe more artists on it than we've ever seen. listing on any of our charts, from Lil Wayne to Imagine Dragons. It's on our rock charts. It's on our hip-hop charts. You, maybe more than anyone, you really go across a lot of different sounds. Is that, you're just saying how much you like technology. Is that based on growing up in an era where people have access to laptops and it's easier to dive into different sounds maybe than ever before, and also growing up just in an iTunes world where you can get any type of music so easily?
Yeah, no, totally. I think the barriers to music have all gone away because of the internet. So also, I grew up in, obviously, in London, so I feel like radio in London is a bit more less segregated in general, especially in the old days. So the kind of Radio One plays everything. So that I think influenced me, and I grew up in a very multicultural kind of place, so that obviously influenced me. And a lot of the ways I create is based around me making fictitious partnerships up in my mind. So I'll be like, what would happen if Wu-Tang Clan and Kings of Leon made a song together, and then I'll try and make that, that music track, and then I'd end up giving that to Rihanna or someone like that. That's kind of how, yeah, I go about making stuff. So I love the idea of mixing things that haven't really been mixed before, or just trying to experiment. That to me is the fun part of making music.
And I've asked this a lot on the podcast for anyone who's listening. One of the things we've talked about is collaboration and writing, and how that's pretty much the way songs are written nowadays. You like that whole process of collaborating with other writers? I know you've written a lot of the songs that you've had on our charts were written with other people. Do you feel that one vision can come out of a writing session with many different writers?
Yeah, I think it's good to have a foundation. You do need a vision. It's hard if everyone's pulling in different directions, but that, as the producer, that's kind of my job, So to establish the vision. And I think one of the things, if I'm good at anything, one of the things I'm good at is having a very definite vision for things. And as soon as I hear things, I know exactly what I want them to sound like and where we should go, So, collaboration is paramount to my process, because, I just think, it can make, it makes things better. And if people bring ideas to the table that are not better than mine, then I just say they're not good enough, But most of the times, they are great, and they incorporate them into what we're doing, and then it just makes everything better.
Yeah, I guess there could be some ego involved in a writing session, maybe five or six people. And who makes the final call? Is it just whatever sounds like it clicks the most, merit based?
Yeah, well, a lot of, like I said before, a lot of the time it's like, I make, so basically the process is I tend to make the music by myself, when it's just one sole focus, and then I'll work with a songwriter to get the hook in a great place, and then we'll go out to other writers and they'll kind of contribute from there. So there's already I like to get places, get things to a place where there's a solid foundation, and then we'll go out and so at that point, people have already bought into the ideas probably of, what me and the person that's writing the hook have put down. So they either like it or they don't. It's not really a debate. And then they add their part, yeah, if they like it.
Right. I think a lot of music fans know what a songwriter is. That's pretty self-explanatory. But how do you describe the job of what a producer is in music?
I definitely think, it's changed over the years and changes depending on genres. But for me, it's just ultimately someone that has a vision, and someone that can pull everything together, whether it's, musicians or a lot of producers in program music make the music themselves, like I do a lot of the time. So it's just about pulling everything together. And I try to take that idea of a producer steps further. So that's always been my goal. So I love to influence the process of everything I'm involved with. So at first it was just the music, and then I take that one step further, and then I start my own record label and publishing company, just so I can influence. Because you can spend, I've been in these situations before where you spend, a year working on a song, and then you play it to an A&R, and he just doesn't get it for whatever reason. He may just had an argument with his wife, or he's in a bad mood, and he just doesn't even listen to it. And then you've wasted all that time. So I hate being in that position. So I never put myself in that position. So I just take that idea, and just the idea of having a vision, and then take it to the point of being able to influence, obviously owning your own record label and then now creative agency and things like that. It's just that vision, can go beyond just the music side, but it's still, it's still a big part of having people hear your music and liking it, hopefully.
Right. Yeah, I want to get into the business side of Kid on a Corner and how you started that. I just wanted to ask in terms of producing artists, is it different with certain artists? Are you more hands-on with some and others? Is it, you know, if you're working with a brand new artist, maybe you're calling the shots a little bit more, but you've worked with, say, Dr. Dre or Bono and The Edge, and you're coming in, and they've been doing this for 30-something years. Are you a little more letting them drive the process, or it's all collaborative? And again, the music dictates where everything's going to go.
Yeah, I think my process is, I guess I'm very hands-on. And like I said before, like the creative process, the writing process, and the producing process all kind of merge into one process. So like it's there's no lines of like, okay, now right. I'm a writer, now I'm a producer. It all kind of happens organically together. And even working with great people like, you know, Bono and U2 and Dr. Dre and stuff, that was a little earlier in my career. But they still allowed me to do that. You know, when I first worked with Dre, you know, I was kind of going in there saying, you know, I just want to kind of learn. I don't want to like, you know, and he was like, the reason why I'm working with you is because I want you to bring to the table what you're good at. So he kind of allowed me to you know, produce him. He was the artist at that point and I was the producer, you know, so even though he's like the best producer ever. So it was kind of, you know, it was weird at first, but then, you know, he's such a nice person that it just became, you know, he made it seem, you know, made it so, so cool and easy to do. And I learned so much from actually those two sessions from Bono especially and from U2 and from Dr. Dre. But yeah, it's kind
so
of like
Bono and The Edge. They're cool to work with in the studio.
Amazing.
It wasn't too intimidating. They were good to you.
It was amazing. You know, they kind of I guess took me on. It's a weird dynamic because they kind of took me under their wing, but at the same time, I'm supposed to be in charge because I'm the producer. So like, you know, so it's interesting, but they gave me the freedom to do that. And, you know, they wanted me to do what I do best, you know, so that's kind of like be the producer. So, you know, at first it was a little bit like, you know, I was just kind of like seeing what it was, but then, you know, they're both so kind of accommodating that I just kind of did my normal thing, which is me kind of being very hands-on and kind of having that vision and just kind of explaining it you know, just kind of, you know, again, I'm very definite in what I think, so there's no gray area. It's like, you know, and that, I think you need that a lot of times in a studio because you can get kind of lost in the gray sometimes.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Can we pretend that airplanes in the night sky like shooting stars? I could really use a wish right now, wish right now, wish right now. Can we pretend that airplanes in the night sky like shooting stars? I could really use a wish right now.
Give everyone the quick story of how you even wound up in the position where you are now as one of the biggest hit makers from as both a writer and a producer. You were in England and you were, we have to say, a footballer to us. It's soccer, but to you it's football. You were doing that and you decided that probably wasn't going to be the best career choice for you, and then you really dedicated yourself to music. You moved to the States and you started getting attention. Is that did I get that right? I think I just told the story for you, Alex.
You did so eloquently. Basically, I was you know, playing football in England and kind of fell out of love with that. And just my friend gave me an early version of Fruity Loops, which I started using, and just completely fell in love with music. And my whole life changed. And I just you know, fell in love, like, unequivocally, and just all I could focus on was music. Like, that's all I could see, that's all I, you know, so it just, every day was just that, and I loved it, and I still do, you know. So, and I just, and I moved to America because I always wanted to come to the biggest market in the world and just, you know, try and be, if you're going to try and be successful anywhere, it's so hard, you might as well try in the biggest market. So, you know, that was always the goal, and then I, you know, managed to get some attention and kind of went from there.
Yeah, and early on, we'll go through some of your hits, but how did Kid in a Corner get founded? And now it's a part of Interscope, so all the releases are distributed through Interscope. But how did that work? That you come over from England, you're in the States, and really before too long, relatively, you have your own imprint. And how did that work? Was it persistence in making contacts in the business?
Yeah, just like I'm a horrible networker. So, but I figured out, I guess, a way of making people like me. I'm very adorable. So I don't know how that works together, but it somehow it does.
it's the accent is part of it.
Yeah, I think
you sound like a nice guy. Yes, the accent doesn't hurt.
Yes, I think if I sounded American, I would not have a career. But so I basically just started meeting people and writing with people and just, you know. And just getting better, and you know, ultimately, you know, just getting better at what I do, I think. And then I managed to do a song called Aeroplanes for B.O.B. That was like the first hit I had. And then Eminem got on the remix of that. And then I sent him some music and he liked it. And I went to Detroit and met him. And then we did Love the Way You Lie. And that kind of, those two songs, like very in quick succession, were both big hits. And that kind of put me on the map. And then I met Jimmy Iovine and you know, we did a label together. And that kind of, it just, it, you know, it's been a crazy ride. And then that, now I've just like, so now I'm kind of at a stage where I'm independent. I, you know, me and Interscope still work together, but, you know, moving forward, you know, I'm very excited about doing the independent thing. I think, you know, it's such an interesting time in the music business to have independence. So yeah, that's kind of where we are right now. And it's exciting.
And this new song, Not Easy, it's the first of, it's actually four songs that you collaborated with as Watson-based Cognitive Songs. So you have your first EP coming out as an artist. So this is actually one song that you did with Watson. There are three others that were done the same way?
Yes, there are three albums that are kind of being done. And I'm kind of working on the EP. You know, and kind of working on that, you know, so we'll see how that goes.
Do you feel a different pressure? Is it feel different to be listed in the artist field after usually being behind the scenes?
I have a different take on the artist thing because my goal isn't to be famous. It's more to like try and build a platform for artists that, and bring opportunities to artists that wouldn't necessarily get them. So for me, I'm not going to be going on tour. I'm running a company. I can't, you know, so my, you know, not to say I won't do performances, I may do, but I won't be going on tour. I'm not going to be like doing the traditional artist thing. But I think building a platform, is interesting to me. And I just want to kind of, you know, I love developing artists. That's my favorite thing to do. And so, you know, I kind of want to build this Alex the Kid platform to be able to help do that.
And it's interesting too with Kid in a Corner. It's you work with a lot of brands, and it maybe in a way that's more closely involved than other partnerships because you bring the creative side. So something like with X Ambassadors, with Renegades, it's part its own song, but it's also part Jeep commercials. So you're kind of blurring lines there as well between music and how music can be synced. And I mean, that really broke X Ambassadors to a whole new level.
Yeah, that was definitely a turning point for us in X Ambassadors' career. And I do think that, like, you know, there's been this whole perception on like doing commercials or working with brands that, you know, people just kind of do it to get a check and like, you know, the creative sucks. But I want to try and change that paradigm and make the creative good. You know, we got a lot of tremendous feedback on the Renegade campaign. And, you know, Olivier, the CMO of Chrysler, kind of, you know, he's kind of a renegade himself, and he like kind of, you know, he allowed us to kind of, you know, make everything feel organic to the artists, you know, which I think was the reason why I was successful. And you know, and it doesn't have to be this whole thing of like, you know, just stand here and do product placement and just say you love the product. It can be so much more integrated than that. I think that's the future of advertising. And you know, I think it's a big part of music too, because there's so much music out there. You've got to be able to differentiate yourself from other things. Because everything is, you know, a lot of music is good. You know, I listen to so much good stuff on SoundCloud, and like these people have no following at all. And it's because there's no like curation. It's like hard to, if you're a fan, it's hard to like really settle and focus on one thing. So these opportunities help to, you know, kind of separate you from the noise. And so, you know, it's really exciting, I think, where we're going with music.
No, that's an interesting case with that, because it was such a big hit at alternative radio. And the thought hit me at one point that how weird is it that alternative radio, which was founded on being you know, artists who were totally alternative on the outside, made a big hit out of a song that you hear on a commercial all the time. Like, that's not alternative. That's commercial. That's top 40. But when you talk about the alternate route that was taken to get the song noticed, it's sort of in that same spirit that, yeah, how do I get noticed? And it wasn't just a song written for the band to hear you sing this. It kind of shows you that there's an alternative spirit when you look at it that way to the way that whole song came about.
Yeah, and I think if the creative for the marketing is good and interesting and works with the artist, I think it can only help the art form. You know, if it only is terrible when the commercial and everything you're building in the marketing sucks, and then it's really bad. So we have to make sure that it doesn't do that. But like if it's good, hopefully it'll help elevate it, because these brands do have big platforms. They spend lots of money in media. You know, they have big you know, networking channels and their distribution and stuff. So. So I think it's a positive thing if you get it right, for sure.
And where did the name Kid in a Corner, and I guess Alex the Kid, where'd that moniker come from, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm Alex the Kid, and obviously Kid in a Corner is, I guess, you know, it's like play on me being in a corner. And I love restriction in my creative process. I like the idea of a corner and just kind of being by myself. And I think, you know, I have a real fondness for like not having distractions. I think, you know, when I first started doing music, it's like such a fragile state. When you first find your passion, everything is so fragile, and any kind of distraction will like take you off your path. And I feel like if you can put yourself like almost in a corner and like just not have any distraction, it just helps, because like the first year or so of you finding your passion is like everything. You know, that's when you have to do the major, you know, kind of work to make it real and try and build a career out of it. So that kind of came from all of that, really.
How often is it that you know, someone who runs a business maybe has that artistic side? You're maybe the rare mix of the creative mind and running the business. Is it ever times when those sort of clash in you, when you have to do some of the business side and you'd rather just be in the studio creating? Or are there times when you just don't want to create? It may be easier to just go over some of the numbers, or you just make it all work?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that sucks is, I guess, like the amount of emails I have. That can get a bit intense sometimes, but everything else, I mean, I really love it. I always encourage creative people to take an interest in your business, because it's the platform where your art sits on. So you can be the best artist in the world, but unless you take an interest in your business, no one's going to really understand it, or like it's not going to be given the proper platform. So I think they go hand in hand, and I really love being creative in business as well. I think it's super challenging. I get the same buzz out of it that I do when I create, you know, music. So I think they both go super hand in hand. And I, you know, I think especially in today's age, in the internet age, in the age where you can go direct to the consumer, like if you're a creative person, you know, take control of your art and make sure that people see it in the proper light. Because, you know, if you just give that over to other people, a lot of times, you know, it may not. And then you've got yourself to blame. Just gonna stand there and watch me burn. Well, that's all right, because I like the way it hurts. Just gonna stand there and hear me cry. Well, that's all right, because I love the way you lie. I love the way you lie. I can't tell you what it really is. I can only tell you what it feels like. And right now, I want to ask you, Alex, about there's a couple of your hits. You mentioned Airplanes was your first biggest first big hit.
Went to number two on the Billboard Hot 100 for B.O.B., featuring Paramore's Hayley Williams. That got the attention of Eminem. You started working with Eminem, and then 7 weeks at number one on the Hot 100 in 2010 for Love the Way You Lie. I was just reading before this interview. You didn't know until the very last minute that song was even going to be on Eminem's Recovery album? As much as it sounds like a hit now, it really went down to the wire like that?
It did, because... I went to Detroit and we recorded it. It was very last minute. Half of the album had already been mastered and they were mastering the rest of it that day. And then we kind of mixed the song together and song sounds great. And then we had to get Rihanna to do her part, and she was in Dublin on tour. And so we basically sent it to her, and we were waiting a day just because we really didn't know if she was going to get it done in time. She was on tour and she was trying to get a studio, but she was, she's on tour. Like, she's kind of like, probably taking naps, and just, she was like, we couldn't get hold of her for like hours. And then she just sent it back and we loved it. And then we very quickly mixed her vocals in. And at that point, the entire album was already mastered and I think we were pushing back the album, and like, it was all like, kind of hands on deck. And then it made it. And but even at that time, like, a lot of people didn't really think it was going to be, as big as it was, especially at radio, because people, it came out, and then I remember distinctly that it came out and everyone liked it, but still people weren't like 100% sure. And then Rihanna had a show at Staples Center, and Eminem came out of the floor, and like, I think all the press were there, and I think everybody was, all the gatekeepers were there. And after that moment, it just exploded. It's kind of funny how things work,
How was that song specifically written? Because it was you, it was Eminem, and Skylar Grey. So did Eminem come up with all the rap part? Did you and Skylar come up with the Love the Way You Lie hook in the chorus?
That was actually, so Skylar, who's also signed to me, I think that was like the second or third track I sent her. So I made the track, and then I sent her, just a couple of tracks, and she sent me back that one and another one that Eminem really liked. And so I loved them, freaked out, and then we sent them to Eminem's manager, and then he, obviously wrote his rap part. So Skylar pretty much, I changed some of the arrangement a little bit, but Skylar pretty much wrote the hook herself. And it's funny because when you just first meet, we were like, is this going to be like, every song's going to be like this? Is this this easy? It's just kind of like, you don't have any context for like, is that easy to go to like number one for 7 weeks? Oh, I didn't know it was that easy. And then, you kind of realize that it's not.
So you hear that hook. Do you think, not to be, overconfident, but you hear a hook like that. Do you think, yep, that's a hit? Or can you just never tell when something you've written is going to connect on that kind of level?
I remember rushing to my then manager's house, who had a relationship with Paul, who's Eminem's manager, and just like playing him these two songs that she just wrote. And I thought they were just perfect for Eminem. Like, I really thought that they would be amazing for Eminem. And then, so I was definitely super excited. I didn't know it was going to be like what it was, but I definitely felt like it would be perfect for Eminem. And before that, I had been sending him like other ideas and like tracks and stuff. And so I started to get like an idea of what he liked, because he would say, I like that one, I don't like that one and stuff. So, and I just kind of, it all kind of just fitted together. So I kind of did know that it was, it was going to be something he probably would like. I didn't know he was, going to just record it. He recorded it pretty quickly afterwards and it just kind of all happened. So that was fun.
Are you a Billboard charts fan, Alex? Do you follow when your songs are going up the charts?
Yes, of course. I mean, I study the charts a lot.
Good answer. Correct answer. Another lie that I carry on. I need to get back to the place I belong. I'm coming home. I'm coming home. I'm coming home. Tell the world I'm coming home. Let the rain wash away all the pain of yesterday. Ain't no more pain. After Love the Way You Lie, the next hit you actually had on the Hot 100 was a song I put in a similar kind of category with the half rap, half just such a great chorus. It was Coming Home.
Yes, that was a fun one.
Written to totally different or same type of process?
Similar process, me and Skylar. And then actually, Coming Home, so they were kind of blurring into one. So Jay-Z wrote the verses for that, and J. Cole. who wasn't big at the time, but has obviously since become huge.
Right.
And because, so basically I made that for T.I. because T.I. was coming home from prison.
And
right, yeah. Yeah. And so I literally was stalking T.I. So we had friends in common. So I would get like our friends in common to like just bring me to wherever he was and just show up at a club or whatever and just like keep on giving him the song. And he liked it, but he wasn't like recording it. So I kept on just doing that and it didn't move anywhere. And then Puff heard the song at Jimmy's house and was saying, I have to have this song. This is a song for me. It's my single. And I was like, no, I've got to give it to T.I. because he's coming home. It makes so much sense. You're not coming home from prison. He is like, so, you know, so like after a lot of, you know, conversations, you know, Puff got JD to write it for him. And J. Cole and a ton of other rappers that he ended up picking Jay's version. And then he recorded there and it sounded great. And then we tweaked some of the production and came out and was a big hit.
Yeah, it just feels like lyrically it's such an inspirational, universal kind of lyric. Who can't hear the coming home phrase and just apply it to so many points in anyone's life? You really hit upon something lyrically with that one.
Yeah, no, it felt good at the time. At that point, we were like, you know, me and Skylar were writing like pretty much every day together and we were just in a groove, you know, everything, you know, we were writing, you know, everything we wrote was being like taken and everyone went like, because after Love the Way You Lie, it kind of went into a place of, you know, of everyone kind of, we became like the it thing, you know, so everyone was coming to us for that kind of sound, you know, yeah, so we were just writing all the time and everybody wanted every song. And it's funny because you go really quickly from like no one caring about your songs and no one caring about you to like people fighting over your songs. And like you have to become a politician and you can't like, you know, you can't give one song to this person or you have to give, if right. you do that, you have to give two songs to this other person. And it's just, you know, it's kind of a different dynamic.
I'll ask you about one more song, Alex, that you had a huge hit with, and you've actually had two diamond singles on the charts. Love the Way You Lie is certified platinum 11 times. Radioactive, Imagine Dragons, 10 times platinum. And that actually holds a very distinctive Billboard Hot 100 record. Do you know what record Radioactive holds in Hot 100 history?
I think I do. It's the longest running song on Billboard Hot 100. I think it was 86 or 87 weeks or something. Am I close?
Wow. I thought I was going to stump you. You got it exactly. 87 weeks on the Hot 100.
There you go.
longest running hit of all time in the Hot 100's 58-year history.
No, you know what? Some of the funnest things about doing music is if you have a song that is reacting on Billboard that you just checking the charts like every week is like, it's like a game. It's like so fun. Like to like, that's like, yeah. You know, that's like, there's like, Dr. Dre told me that like, there's no feeling like kind of, you know, when you've had a hit and like you see people listening to it and you're checking the charts, it's like, that's the best time ever in life. If you're like a musician or producer or whatever. So yeah,
oh, that's great. And yeah, in that song, it started at alternative radio, worked its way over to pop and just hung around for a long time. And that's another one of those songs that is sort of like Not Easy and some of your other hits that kind of blends different sounds. It's alternative, but it's sort of a trap element to it. There's a lot musically going on in Radioactive.
Yeah. It's kind of, so basically every single song I've made has pretty much not been for the person that ends up doing it. So for Radioactive, I started the track, I think for Skylar. And it just kind of, you know, then I just found Imagine Dragons and we started working a lot. And the way we kind of started was it wasn't for them as a band really so much as we were just writing to create. It wasn't really to, you know, for their album or anything. We just were writing. And, and then we started Radioactive and it felt really good. But people didn't really understand it because it was so different, you know, for an alternative band to like kind of have right. something that kind of that programmed and then like, you know, the band added some guitars and like, you know, a few like kind of live elements. And then I would like take, so basically how we work is that they record stuff and then over my productions, and then I will kind of take it and like treat it like, you know, a sample, or I'll just treat it and like, you know, kind of, you know, take their raw elements and make them work with the track. And then yeah, it kind of just, you know, we put it out there. Dan, the lead singer Dan Reynolds of Imagine Dragons, was really passionate about the song, and you know, so, you know, we end up using it, and it just kind of literally from day one, it was the song that was, it wasn't the first single, but it was a song that people reacted with, and it just, you know, it just kind of, it was just, it was just very urgent. And it's one of, like, a lot of my songs, maybe not some of the earlier ones, but the ones that start off more in the alternative space and like kind of where my career's gone, they're not like, they don't start on like, you know, top 40, they start at alternative and they take a long time to build to top 40, but then they stick around for a long time, and Radioactive kind of did that, and it's, you know, it's still like selling and streaming like crazy. So that's the kind of stuff I love to do, is like hopefully make songs that last a while.
Well, this has been really fun to talk to you, Alex. And, you know, I started this podcast earlier this year, and a big part of it was to talk with songwriters and producers and really find out the backstories of songs and how they get created. And one of the things we found through a lot of different conversations is how there's so much more collaboration and how technology plays in the part of how younger artists who grew up in the internet era create music now. And you're just like the perfect example of how you've taken all those different influences, and that's how your music, you're now creating with Watson, with IBM Watson, and you've turned it into a whole business for yourself. This is great education for anyone listening.
Well, thanks. That means a lot. And yeah, I think it's a really exciting time. You know, where we're going in music. I think, you know, with streaming and everything else, I think it's, you know, the business, you know, is starting to hit an upward swing again. And I think we're just at the start of it. And I think, you know, it's a really exciting time to like be making music. And obviously, what, you know, being in music has always been sexy and fun, and everyone wants to be in music. But the business of it now is I think going to kind of rebound and catch up and be just as sexy and fun. And so yeah, I mean, I'm really excited to be in it. You know, it's just a great community to be a part of.
Alex, thank you so much for taking some time to chat about all your hits, your process, and your new song here on the Billboard Chartbeat podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Hey,